Breaking news, Harsh Marge, with your host, Gregory Scott Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live! That's right, kids. Harsh Barge is back with a second attempt. Our tech support on both sides have worked feverishly through the nights, and we have the one and only Nate Sherwood joining us. You know what I want to say, though? What is going on with McKinney? I don't know where he is. I don't know what he's been up to. Everybody's hitting me up. They're asking me questions, and we'll figure it out eventually. I'm sure he might tune in and drop some funny comments here and there. But without further ado, we're going to bring on our guest. And remember, this is live, so I do have to give the preempted thing that anything could happen tonight. There could be issues, there could be problems, but our tech support has definitely told us that it should be okay. So do you guys know who's up?
Who can it be?
That's right. The one, the only, Nate Sherwood.
Nate Sherwood's dead is skating the world.
And we got the bumper all made. Nate, welcome to the show and welcome to Harsh Barge as our first employee or teammate, or I don't even know what we're going to call you, but me and McKinney have been playing around. You seem to be hyped on it. You sent us your profile, your tracks, all your stuff, and you're here, man. How are you? How's Iowa? Yeah. How's Eduskate Shop? And thanks to your lady friend for connecting us. You look much better the last time, and hopefully it doesn't go black. Hopefully we don't have any issues.
Dude, absolutely, man. Last time was unbelievable, like EMF. I cannot believe the tech meltdown we had. I apologize to anybody out there that, you know, put off work or taking the kids to school or whatever was going on in their life around the world to tune into that and have that major faux pas happen. But I appreciate Skate being here. I keep everyone out there motor skated. I like keeping it very creascative, and I like to decker skate the language with what we're doing tonight. Being a correspondent for Talking Schmidt is a lifelong dream come true, man. I've always admired, Lance Mountain's, segment on Skate TV back in the day, and to be able to do the same type of thing with Shop Talk and talking about the small nuances and all the esoteric things that go into skateboarding with equipment support is truly a great honor to personify that to the world, because I do it behind the counter for the past 14 years every day, but to be able to vocalize it to people outside of, the little micro dot of skate society that I live in here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, it does mean a lot to me, and I'm happy to be using this platform and being able to piggyback right off of what you and McKinney do. So thank you so much for having me here and having me as a part of your team.
Yeah, dude, we're hyped. And we're going to start it off right away. Soulja Jones is in the house, and he wants to know, favorite pressure flip?
Wow, that's a hard one for me. It's like choosing one of your children to be the favorite, right? Go too easy. If we're just talking just a pressure flip without any, grind or slide or any variation into it, I would have to say the laser pressure flip or front side 360 shove it pressure flip is my favorite. It's like a lot of people think it's a laser flip, but they don't slow-mo it, but it's just like a front side 360 heel flip. You know what I mean? Looks like a laser, but it's scooped with your back toe. That's probably my favorite. It's always a lot of fun. It's always really very cathartic. It's very meditative. I love just kicking that thing out first thing in the morning. As I get older, it's a little bit harder than it used to be, but it's still a great feeling of connecting to my youth. When I first, figured that one out in 1991, hanging out with Chris Fissell in a parking lot at a holiday school in Portland, Oregon. So that would probably be my favorite, mostly because of the sentimental quality to it, but also because even still to this day, 30 years later, people still get fooled by it and think it's a laser flip. And I always have to correct them. No, it's a frontside 360 shove it pressure flip or whatever, But it is a fun one and an enjoyable one for sure.
Shout out to Chris Fissell, right?
Shout out.
Yeah, Chris Fissell, great guy. I mean, he was my mentor. When I was 12 years old, I tore two ligaments in my flick foot, my left foot. And the doctors, then weren't like they are now. There wasn't physical therapists on site. My parents, who I love, my parents loved me, but they weren't you know, athletes by any means. So they didn't understand the importance of physical therapy or stretching or any of that stuff. So when I tore those ligaments, my ankle got so stiff, and to this day, there was so much scar tissue in there that my kick flips, my heel flips, you know, all that kind of stuff was really hurting. And so I learned press flips basically as a, I guess you could say as a way out, as a way to keep myself sane because I couldn't flick anymore. And so I knew Chris Fissell through guys like Matt Beach and Dave Hupp and Jamie Fortune. I would see him at, you know, he was much older than me, but I'd see him at different spots around town. And he taught me how to do the traditional, just, you know, little, you know, shove it pressure flip that everyone does. And after that, it just kind of spawned. Every time someone was either inventing or innovating a trick after that, I was like, okay, if this person could do a big spin flip, I'm going to do it, but pressure, you know? And then I saw Frank Carrada and Willie Santos doing that in Feasters and also High Karate. You know, whatever. Blizzard flips became very popular. And then I was doing blizzard pressure flips. I mean, whatever. We could go on. Every derivative of kickflip or heel flip variation you can think of, I was just like, how can I do this pressure flip? And then I would just kind of come up with a way of doing that. Then guys like Damon Bird were dropping stuff. And, you know, there was a lot of heads that were, you know, in the big pants, small wheels era, you know, guys like Ron Kenigi, of course, and Justin Gerard, and, you know, a lot of those Bay Area dudes, Rick Abbasetta, you know, those were a lot of my
Rick
early influences.
Yeah. Rick Guy. That's
Rick
that's
Guy. Yeah.
I love yeah. that dude.
Me too. Big fan. Huge fan. It was neat that for a while, their pressure flips were being done by everybody. I mean, Steve Caballero in Hot Batch was doing pressure flips. Wade Spire was in Concord, not from where we're sitting, doing a pressure flip, you know, pivot on that little garage mini ramp and
Hot Batch. You know? Flipping, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Wade Spire doing pressure flips. Just think about how crazy that is. The man that once said that if it's not country, it's not music, drives a gnarly truck with cowboy boots, was doing such a fresh trick as a pressure flip. And I mean this in the most loving way. I love Wade. And in fact, there was a skate camp in Oregon, the Dalles, Oregon. And it was the summer between my sixth and seventh grade of school. And you can do the math on it. But long story short, this is he wrote for Think at this time. And he flew up to be one of the guest pros at it. And my mom volunteered to pick him up from the airport because his lift, Chad Vaught, flaked out like dandruff. Chad's car broke down. So Helen Ellsmore later ran the skate camp, called my mom because for some reason they were homies. And I picked him up from the airport. And we drove him like 2.5 hours out to the Dalles, Oregon, like way out to the you know, Columbia River Gorge. And I was just sitting in the Volvo, like all fanned out, like trying to be all cool, like a little kid, like Wade Spire's in the back of the Volvo, like, holy shit. And, you know, listening to Black Sabbath and listening to the Beatles and shit. And him just sitting there very quiet and very reserved, just chill as fuck, you know, very, very polite to my mom, but, you know, very just like your typical teenage, you know, dude. And I'll just never forget that, you know, Wade Spire and my mom being such a hero to pick him up from the airport. You know?
Dude, Wade's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's great. I mean, first guy to skate hub a hideout. I mean, you know, that I love that like knee tuck he had on the cover of the mag, you know, like down that big old hill. And
is it a crooked grind or a nose bonk?
Oh, wow. What he did? Yeah. I always okay. Maybe I'm just under the.
I don't think there was video of it. There's just the photo, yeah. Right? I think it's a Dogtown ad.
The Dogtown.
He's
yeah.
in a crooked grind, but it could just be a nose bonk too.
He might have. You know,
this knowing Wade, you don't know what it was.
Yeah, we need to kid up Wade and ask him because I always from the Dogtown ad, I always thought it was a crooks, and I could be very wrong. There's a lot of things in my life where then the video comes out or someone says, "No, man, I did this," or you know how that is. I mean, I remember meeting Brian Lotti and. You know, first time I met him, you know, I was all stoked as like every little kid is. And you know, like it was already very well publicized that he was the inventor of the big spin. He's like, nah, someone else probably, he was so humble. Someone else probably did it. They just weren't in the limelight. And he was very like humble. And I love that beauty of people that can just say, you know, I don't know. I was the first guy that got, you know, published doing it, but that doesn't mean I was the first. There could be some farm boy in Nebraska that, you know what I mean? Like whatever, you know what I mean? He left it up to the magistration and there's a beauty to that, you know.
Hey, the humble will be always respected. That's what absolutely. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Speaking of these early days though, Soldier Jones, he says, did Nate grow up in the Dalles? Did he live in Hood River? I'm curious to know about your early upbringing. It is Oregon, right?
It was Oregon. I was not in the Dalles or Hood River. I do love that area. I spent some time out there. I grew up in Vancouver, Washington, right across the river from Portland, Oregon. I grew up in the Couve.
Oh, okay.
So my dad got a job there when I was 2 months old, and we moved there from Kenosha, Wisconsin, which, you know, a small little town between Racine and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I was only 2 months old, so I don't remember any of it. It was one of those things. My mom got knocked up. Now I don't want the details of those things. And in March of 79, they moved to Vancouver, Washington, because my dad got a job with a with a local bank there. And so, yeah, I mean, I would commute to Portland every day to skate and do things and get groceries. Vancouver, Washington is like a better commute to Portland. And the thing about it is, at the time in Washington State, there was no property tax. You could buy a house and have no property tax, but in Oregon, there was no sales tax. So people were like working the system that would live on that side of the Columbia River, because they would drive across the river to Jansen Beach and they get all their groceries and all their shopping and stuff, and then drive back across, you know, where there was a sales tax. It was an interesting little loophole in the system at the time. But, you know, so yeah, I mean, I grew up there, but I spent a lot of time in Belmont Street. I lived over in Hawthorne for a while. I went to school in Beaverton. I was a major fuck up in middle school, so my parents sent me away to a Catholic school my freshman, sophomore, junior.
That's where Nike is, right? Beaverton?
Yeah, yeah. I used to ride the bus 54 TriMet every morning by the Nike campus. And this is what's hilarious now. And again, I'm not saying this is a political thing. Full disclaimer, I'm saying this is as the most humble, just this thing that happened in the past. It's not bad. It's not good. It's anything. It's just a fact. My friend Noah Steinberg and me decided to get off the bus early. We were on the earlier bus and we had a late start, basically our first period. You know, there was like one of those PTA things. And he's like, hey, let's go skate that curb in front of Nike. And, you know, we realized that, you know, the class didn't start till 9 a.m. instead of, 8:15. So we're like, yeah, we can catch the next one. We'll skate the curb. And we got busted before we could even do like the first manual. And it was just so funny because at that time in 1993, Nike was not, you know, like it is now. It wasn't, you know, now I think they'd be like, yeah, you know, we're all about skateboarding, which is, you know, great. Good for them. I'm happy things evolve. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Good for them that they evolved and grew to love us. You know, but I just remember me and Noah Steinberg getting busted, you know, 1993, fall of 93, this guy coming out in a polo shirt, the little Nike badge, security, the little laminate, you know, little earpiece, little, you know, walkie-talkie cord. You know, you guys can't do that shit here. You got to leave. Da, 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 da. I could cite you for criminal trespassing because we had to jump like a fence that was, you know, so short that, you know, Danny Wainwright could all get easy.
Wainwright.
You know, I mean, it was actually tall. I just mean short in the sense that it wasn't like we had to climb a 6-foot fence. But yeah, Danny Wainwright, shout out. But I'll never forget me and Noah Steinberg, you know, laughing about that on the TriMet 54 route, Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. But yeah, I was where Nike was. And a lot of my good friends work at Nike now. A lot of my good friends growing up worked at Nike. A lot of my friends' dads and moms worked at Nike. It was a huge part of the economy there. I mean, I remember going to sleepovers and, you know, finding someone's mom worked at Nike. And, you know, it's such a huge operation and there were so many moving parts, or there is, I should say, that, you know, it provided a lot for the economy. So I'm not shitting on Nike by any means. It was just one of those hilarious things that, you know, the place that now that, you know, is so pro skateboarding was so like, get the fuck off our curb, you know? And, you know, it was one of those, you know, classic, you know, we're 14 years old going to school, jumping a fence and, you know, whatever. And we had some time to kill. And, but yeah, I went to school in Beaverton for 3 years, then transferred my senior back to Vancouver, Washington, to Hudson's Bay High School for my senior, cause I got my grades up and got out of hot water with the folks.
So how did you end up in Iowa?
So I was in San Diego, California. I was working at Duff's Shoes at the time. This is back in 07, 06. Sorry, Jesus.
Shout out.
Yeah, yeah. And I was working there. RP Best, Russ Pope. Shout out to all those guys. Thanks for giving me a
shout out.
Yep, word. I was working at Duff's. And anyway, my good friend, Burt Gregory, who's an amazing graffiti writer by the name of Manic. Shout out to the WoW crew. And his buddy Andre, who's like this guy, he's in the Visionaries. He's like an underground rapper guy. Anyway, long story short, they came to visit me in San Diego from L.A. Bert grew up in Portland with me, but he moved to L.A., et cetera, et cetera. I was working in the music industry. And they came to visit me, and the beach was just super crowded with like summer party goers and, you know, Midwesterners and shit. But we wanted to watch the sunset. So there was like this little alleyway. There was this bridge, right? This little footbridge, right? They roll up a joint. They're smoking the joint. I'm just hanging out. I don't need weed. I'm already weird enough. So anyway, like they're smoking a joint, passing around. I'm hanging out. We're just doing a little slappy grinds on this little curb and some stalls. And all of a sudden I see this beautiful woman taking out these two trash bags out of her apartment complex, two giant trash bags. She looked like one of those ants when they carry something like three times their size, like an insect. And my friend Bert, of course, he's like, I'm going to go talk to her. I'll help her out. I'm like, dude, don't do that. It's creepy. But he did. He started a conversation with her, like threw the bags in the dumpster. She comes out and talks to us. She's just super brave and just outgoing, right? Reminds me of a lot of like Trixie with, you know, 23, that personality, just like outgoing, like punk rock, like fuck yeah. She's like, what are you guys doing? We're like, we're watching the sunset. She's like, oh, that's cool. Hey, is there a good bar with a pool table at it around here? And we're like, yeah, like what's going on? She's like, I just moved into this apartment last week. I'm from Iowa. And we're like, dude, we'll take you to this bar called the Embassy. Let's go shoot some pool tonight. So that turned out to be who my wife is now 20 years later.
Wow.
Anyway, we fall in love, exchange numbers, blah, blah. She texts me about a week later, and she's like, the moon's beautiful tonight. Now, you want to hang on the beach? And anyway, we fall in love, and here we are, fast forward, well, almost 20 years, whatever, 07, 18 years later, you know, 19 years later. Jesus Christ, I had to think about that. It was November of 06, so whatever, either way. Anyway, rough round up to 20 years later, we're married. So we went to, fast forward to 09 after that. I did the whole meet the parents thing because I talked to him on the phone, but you know how his parents want to make sure their daughter's not dating a serial killer.
Mm.
I flew back here with her to just, meet the parents and do all that shit and, learn about Iowa. I never been to Iowa in my life. Didn't even know about Cedar Rapids, even though it existed. I knew about Des Moines because of, random punk bands and random, mountain goat songs and things, but nothing, I didn't know much about it other than that, culturally speaking, sadly, to my own ignorance, to my own accord. But anyway, I get here and I realize there's a huge skate scene. There's amazing street spots, a lot of skaters. And the nearest skate shop was 23 miles away in Iowa City at the time. And I was like, dudes, they're driving 23 miles each way to, get a board if they snap it or get a bearing. And at the time, that shop was just a Zoomies. And, it's a mall shop, whatever, et cetera. We can debate that up the road. But, you get the point. There was nowhere to get stuff instantly. And I broke a bearing at the local park. And I was like, damn it, I got to go all the way to Iowa City to get a set of bearings for $8. This, sucks. That's 40 miles round trip for a set of bearings. So the light bulb went off. I was like, what am I doing with my life? This place needs a fucking skate shop. There's tons of people skating, lots of rippers that aren't getting their shine or their dues that, their limelight that they deserve. They're paying their dues and they're not getting the respect that they deserve. And the sparks went off. And anyway, fast forward to 2012, that was 09. For 3 years, I was, still milking the old has-been pro thing. Airspeed gave me a shoe and I was able to save up enough money to start my own shop. I won't get the details economically about that, but I put away a hefty amount of money. And I after everything was fizzled out with skateboarding, I got a job at this car dealership that my friend Drew Doran hired me, old filmer for Birdhouse. Long story short, he got me a job in customer service, which by the way, is the worst job in the world. I don't wish it upon my worst enemies. April of 2012, me and Lindsay, I quit my job at the Ford dealership and we moved here and we opened up the shop and opened up on June 1st of 2012. And we just had our 14-year anniversary where I just been standing behind a counter, cracking jokes, building skateboards, skating with people, doing what I love and loving what I do, man. Just taking a vow of poverty, being the high priest of skateboarding, and to the trucks, the wheels, and the holy bearings we pray. Boom. That's what I do every day,
Dude, that rules.
Yeah. Yeah.
14 years, man. That's,
yeah, it's wild.
It's not only a commitment, but it's also a successful business. I mean, a lot of things don't last that long. We know that.
Oh yeah. It's sad to see all the brands that go in and out where, we carried them. I think of so many deck brands, which I won't even name, that were here for a flash. I carried them. I was proud of them, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're no more. And then people come in, you got a clientele that already likes them. They're like, where are these? Why aren't they here? Like, oh, I'm sorry. Turf is no more, whatever, insert, whatever brand. Hella Cool's not around, whatever. And I can think of that with, everything. I saw so many changes in those 14 years behind the counter. I have no employees. It's just me and the wife. We're literally a mom and pop operation. So, I saw everything on the day-to-day basic, the violent changes, the hostile takeovers, the mergers, the, ups and downs with shit like COVID and economic depressions, the weird online mega deals where they're selling 10 boards for less than our cost on one and, weird shit like that. That was not fun, but big shout out to Jim Thiebaud at Deluxe, who never fucking went into that world and has always respected and helped out shops like us. I would give Jim my kidneys if he needed them, dude. I love that man like a brother. He has done so much for our shop. I cannot even begin to articulate in my vernacular, my vocabulary, how thankful I'm for him being a patron of the local shop, helping out small mom pops. I'm sure he's such a low key, mellow man, but
yeah,
he's done so much for us over the years and countless other shops. I mean, there's so many times where I've talked to other buddies at other shops. We have a sewing circle of everything, and there'll be a shop that gets a break in, horrible, someone will break in, steal shit, all this stuff, and Jim will just spot them and send them product to, help them out their insurance claim, whatever. I mean, we could go on. There's a million great stories about Jim. He's the patron saint of small shops. I want to get a votive candle for that motherfucker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He does so much for us. And
shout out.
I just can't even, I can't even put into words how thankful I'm to that man and what he's done for skateboarding as a whole. Obviously, from the PAL to the SMA days to Deluxe to, being this awesome, great guy.
100%. Jim's the best. Mm-hmm. Hey, I wanted to ask you, you said you saw the Phil Schau documentary, and I'm wondering what your experience, if you had any experiences with Phil, or saw videos of him, seen him in person or anything like that. I always like to hype up the guys that were my friends, and he was the pioneer of my friends in skateboarding.
He was such a good man, such a great guy. I was a teenager when I met him, and me and Mike Chin were skating Waterfront Park. I'll never forget it, man. I literally had my JanSport blue backpack, and Waterfront was the hopping spot in Portland at the time, right across the Burnside Bridge from Burnside Skate Park. So it was kind of the warm-up spot. You'd skate there, then go to Burnside, beat the shit out of yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And anyway, I had my blue JanSport backpack, and there's these nice little low to high ledges down there. I'm just warm up doing my normal repertoire of pressure with bullshit on flat ground. And Phil Shio, just on a solo mission, comes flying through, ollies over my back tack to manual, and then just locks into a beautiful crooked grind on this ledge just for like a zillion feet, you know, and you didn't see that back then, you know what I mean? People just kiss the ledge then, just beautifully pinched, skates through, you know, comes back, power slides, does this beautiful front tail on this other ledge, comes over to me and Mike Chin, and Mike Chin had a rapport with him. He actually met him before and knew him, and Phil knew him by first name. He was like, "Hey, Mikey, how you doing?" And I'm like, "Whoa." Mikey was riding for Adrenaline at the time, and you know, they were talking about Adrenaline and you know, all the nuances of that. And I just kind of stand there just listening, like, "Oh my god, it's fucking Phil Shio." And Phil just gives me nucks. "What's your name?" I said, "My name is Nathan." And he was very cool. And this is the best part. I'll admit it, I was your typical teenager. I was trying to show off to my hero. So I was trying to do this backside pressure fakie 50, and I'm bailing. And I'm not paying attention to my backpack, which has my wallet, my bus pass, you know, my whole life, everything you need as a, you know, teenager to get, you know, through the day. And some homeless guy tries to gank my backpack, and Phil's like, hey, motherfucker. You know, like goes up to the guy, and the guy just drops and walks away. He's like, "That dude tried to steal your backpack." I'm like, "Holy shit. Thanks, man." He gave me my backpack, and I was so thankful. I was like, "Thanks, man." He's like, "No problem, man. We got to look out for each other." I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Hey, I got to get back over to the park." Gives me nucks. Skates across the bridge to Burnside. We just watch him go up the little stairs over by Skidmore Fountain. And he skates across the bridge. I just watched him, like, you know, like an old Western skate off into the sunset across the bridge. And I didn't want to stalk him and be weird, but I kind of waited like maybe an hour to cool off, so I didn't look like I was following him across the bridge. And me and Mike kind of skate had a sesh.
Yeah.
And so it started sprinkling out, but then I had a good excuse now to go there, right? So it started sprinkling. Mike was like, "Oh, let's go to the park." I'm like, "Deal." So I pulled what we called board condoms at the time out of my JanSport. We had these like big board bags. So, you know, because, you know, back then, you know, board was like everything. You know, we didn't want to get a drop of water on. So we wrapped our boards in our board condoms. Me and Mike walk across the bridge. We go into the bridge. We go behind the punk wall. We unwrap our board condoms. And Phil's down there with Karma Tochtoff. That was interesting. It was Karma Tochtoff, John Cardiel, Julian Stranger, and a bunch of other people, Choppy Omega, a bunch of other dudes are just ripping, just, you know, tearing transition apart. There's a bunch of other dudes which are kind of foggy, Mark Red Scott, Osage Buffalo, but, you know, a bunch of locals, Pigpen, you know, it's just one of those dream sessions at Burnside. Everyone's just ripping, taking their turns. And Phil just beautifully, just like doing backside ollies over the big hip, like nothing, carving a million miles an hour, using the whole course, not even missing one, like, spot, just like skating like a surfer, just slash grinding things, and just, you can tell, having a fun time doing these beautiful little nollie 180s over that like weird ditch thing that goes to the between the cinder block wall and the little spine, that little hole in the ground. I know we used to always ollie, I don't even know what to call it to this day, but has the manhole cover. And then, you know, he was just doing these beautiful lines. I still remember him like yesterday. And it was so rad, man. Like I remember hanging out and just, you know, watching him rip till the sun went down and it got dark. And at that time, the lights weren't that good down there at dark, and him and his buddies were all just bullshitting and cracking open beers by the van. I just kind of gave them all nucks, you know, kind of like, okay, it's Julian Stranger card. I didn't want to bother them. You know, I didn't want to be a lurker. I didn't want to be a fanboy. And so I said my goodbyes, and then I went over to Cal Skate because they're getting ready to close. And I had some time to kill for the bus 5 interstate to go back to Vancouver to, you know, so I just kind of bullshit with Paul Fujita, those guys behind the counter there, and was told about how I met Phil. And they're like, "Yeah, he was in here earlier, actually, blah, blah." You know, I was like, sick. I was just such a neat guy. And fast forward that same weekend, that same trip, this is the crazy thing. And actually, I couldn't believe it. Cardiel remembered this. I remember it because it's one of those things as a kid I'll never forget. But Cardiel can tell you about this too. It's one of those things where I couldn't believe it when I saw him a million years after this, that he remembered this moment. So fast forward that same weekend, I'm skating the parking lot again, doing my normal repertoire of pressure bullshit back and forth. And Cardiel and Julian are just sitting there on the side of the van. They're all eating a big box of donuts. And I, you know, their eyes are dog dick red. I imagine they're stoned. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they had allergies, but, you know, the vibe is munchies and stoners. I could be wrong, but, you know, that's the vibe to this day, I feel. And anyway, I'm doing my normal repertoire of pressure bullshit, and Karma, he yells out, "Hey, I'll give you a free deck if you do 100 press ups in a row. And I was like, I'll go for it. Like, why not free deck? Like, you know, dude, absolutely. Like, why not? Right. And I got to 82 pressure flips in a row, just the normal shove it ones. And my leg cramps up so bad. Like, I had a calf cramp from hell. And my foot's flinching, just doing that gnarly, like, electricity thing. I'm on the ground, like, breathing all heavy, like, just breathing all hard, like, feel like I'm going to die. Like, you know how this is when you're everything's shaking. You're like, you need hydration. You're about to die. But I didn't know that at, you know, 14, right? And so, anyway, like, this is the best thing ever. Phil comes out, Phil and Card and Karma come out with the box of donuts. They're looking down at me, and there's, like, you know, it's like powdered donuts, just crumbs on me. I'm laying there. I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't get to 100. They're like, we don't give a shit. Here's the board anyway. And this is the funniest thing about this story is that it wasn't really a board from other sponsors. It was Shaft, that weird short-lived brand Shaft skateboards that had, like, pictures of John Shaft on them and Raven Mike Road Form. I don't know. I think someone must have gave it to them on the road trip, and they're just like, what are we going to do with this fucking thing? We'll just give it to some kid, you know?
Yeah.
And so I get the board. I'm hugging it. And I'm just kind of like, oh, my God, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And Phil just gives me, you know, gives me a kind of a, like a thumbs up, like, hell yeah. Phil goes back to skate in the park. Card stands there and just kind of laughs, helps me up, you know, to my feet, you know? And I'll fast forward a little bit so you're not stuck here until midnight. But anyway, I go to the shop the next day. I go to Cal Skate to grip it, right? And anyway, I take it home that night. My dad worked really long shifts. He would work night shift. Anyway, he comes home thinking I stole the board from Cal Skate, because Cal Skate had this little, like, you know, like die cut grip tape, like the Plan B grip tape then of their logo, right? Uh-huh. So he calls Cal Skate, calls Howard Wire. He's like, hey, did my son steal a board from you? Because he doesn't believe me, I got it for free. Because back then, before Google, you couldn't be like, oh, here's Phil Shao, dad. Here's, you know, Karma Toshoff. Here's Uncle. I got a free board because I'm cool. My dad just thought I was a delinquent piece of shit kid that would have stole a board from a shop. So he thought that, like literally that, like, I stole this thing. I made up this big, long-winded story about my new free board that these guys gave it to me. Because, you know, I don't blame him. I was a hellraiser. But anyway, uh-huh. It was so funny. So, like, I go to Cal Skate again, like, a week after that, and Howard tells me a story about my dad calling, which I never knew about, and I just started laughing, of course, because, you know, those days you couldn't prove that your favorite pros gave this to you.
Right. So
fast forward, like, a million years, I'm at the Boost Mobile contest in Vegas. I'm probably in my early 20s. I'm skating the contest, just, you know, huffing and puffing. I get done with my runs, and Card is there, and I go up to Card. I'm like, hey, how's it going? My name is Nate Sherwood. Nice to meet you. Or no, I say my name is Nate. Nice to meet you. He's like, you're Nate Sherwood. I'm like, oh my God, Card knows my name. I'm kind of like fucking dumbfounded. He's like, do you remember Burnside where I gave you a deck for trying to do 100 press-ups in a row? I'm like, yes. And I was just tripped out because I was like, how does Card remember this? Like, I remember, of course, but how the fuck is, out of all the millions of kids he's met and da da da. And you know, he just starts talking about him and Phil and Karma and how Julian was like, he's not going to get past 20. He's not going to get past 20. He's going to die at 20. And like, I guess they were like taking bets. Like Karma was like, he's going to get to 30. And Julian was like, he's going to get 20. And Phil was like, just don't say that. Like, Phil was like so positive. He's like, he's probably going to get, he's going to get to 100, guys. Come on, like, positive energy. And I'm paraphrasing, but you know, Phil was like in this like positive, guys, come on, don't wish him bad. Like, let's, you know, let's root for the little kid, you know? And I just love that about Phil, that he was always rooting for people. I had no idea that he was going to Berkeley at the time. I had no idea. I mean, I knew his tech prowess was amazing. I knew his transition prowess was amazing. And I had no idea he was a college student. I had no idea that he was so into physical therapy and all those things until your documentary, of course. But I'm going to admit it, man. I'm going to admit it. I cried so hard to that documentary. I haven't cried like that in years. I haven't cried like that since my uncle, who I loved dearly, died. You know, I heard about it at the time after he died, of course, because it was in Oregon where he passed away in the car wreck. And I remember hearing about it from all the locals at Burnside. And I remember hearing about it at the time. And, you know, it just broke my heart, man, because I met him a couple other times after that. But those are the times that will stick with me forever. A couple of times I ran to him just, you know, in Oregon, you know, but I remember just thinking to myself, God, how the hell do you stake the top bar at Fort Miley? My first trip to gnarly. Yeah. When I went to Fort Miley for the first time in summer of 1997, after I graduated high school, my 1997 trip, I went down there for my senior trip. Me and my buddy Brandon, his brother lived in Hayward. We flew down Alaska Airlines from Portland to SFO. We crashed on his brother's couch for 2 weeks. That's a long story. But anyway, we went to fucking Fort Miley. I remember looking at that and being like, how the fuck does anyone get up on this thing? You know, I was just doing little tiny ollies over the corner, trying to figure out how to like play the transition and how to carve it. Just to get a good lofty ollie, like, not to brag, but I had a pretty good flat ground ollie at the time. Like, I could get over a full-size garbage can and all of the Sean Sheffy toy car for, you know, like my little siblings, like he did for his kid. You know, I thought I was the baddest with ollies. And then I got to that thing, I was like, how the fuck did Phil do this? Like, this doesn't seem humanly possible. Like, I looked at that bar so much. I remember my friend Brandon, too, Tonto. We both just sat there staring at it for hours, just like, how in the fuck did Phil Schild get up on this thing? Like, to this day, it doesn't make, like, and people who've never been there don't understand the gravity, the magnitude of that, how granular insane it is, because how steep it is, how hard it is, how close the bar is to hitting your knees on it. So many things go in the dichotomy of that. I mean, the space between is barely enough to nosebone slide, you know? Like, I think of Whitehead Skypager, Julian skating the ledge of it, and you know, all my New Deal heroes skating the hip, you know, the little hip, which I skate because that's the only thing I can fucking do there.
Armando Barajas,
you know, all those guys. I mean, you name it, you know, all those motherfuckers just ripping that little, you know, little hip. The big hip was so hard, I could barely ollie it. And I'm talking shit ollies, you know what I mean? Nothing like, you know, and so it's beautiful that you brought so much attention to that and the magnitude of that, because I think most people, they become humbled because they've never been to Fort Myers. They don't understand how hard that place is to skate. And
yeah, same as China Banks, which is being demolished right now, which is so sad. Rest in peace.
It is so sad. And I love China Banks too. I mean, I didn't do anything of note there worth, you know, filming. I mean, I carved it and, you know, I carved around. I did pretty much what 22-year-old son did, you know, just carved, came in fakey, you know, did a couple, you know, carve reverts. I did a little frontside ollie on it, you know, but nothing beautiful, you know, nothing.
Waylon Trujillo. Yeah. He's been ripping.
Yeah, props to him. I went to Berkeley Banks, and I remember thinking the Berkeley Banks would be harder than China Banks, but the Berkeley Banks and the tennis courts were actually easier to skate, and I got more tricks
for sure.
On China Banks, maybe you'd shit a million times, but I remember going to the Berkeley Banks thinking they'd be harder from the video, you know, the old Julian Stranger and not as, you know, shit. And Andy Roy or whatever. But I remember going there and getting like lofty frontside ollies and disasters and slap to tails, you know, whatever, a million other lip tricks on it, and thinking after China Banks, because I remember taking the BART and being like, oh man, China Banks is hard. This is going to be harder, but I got to go there. And I remember being like, oh my God, Brandon, these are easier as fuck compared to China Banks. It was like China Banks was like running with weights on your ankles. And then going to Berkeley Banks was like easy. It's not easy, but you know what I mean? Easier.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I remember doing like a little crail slide on it, and it's somewhere buried in the internet somewhere. But that was probably the best thing I ever did on the Berkeley Banks. I don't know how people do fence plants and shit there. I died trying to do that. I kept laying on flat and dying. I have no idea how anybody does a fence plant on that thing is a god. Jaya Bondria, fucking dude, how? I don't know how you did that. Jesse Paez, Justin Strubing, any of those guys that did weird shit on that fence.
Or and then underneath in the parking lot, they got the pole going across, like Raven frontside nose grounded or something.
Yeah, yep. You know exactly where I was going to go, man. So many. And I remember Big Pants Smalls with Jai Barf did like a blunt to fakie on that at nighttime. Jai
was so good. Yeah.
Oh, rest in peace. He, again, another car wreck taking someone.
Yeah.
You know, such
there's so many of those.
He was such a nice guy. I only met him once again at Burnside. You know, he's only there. He was leaving right, and I showed up, and I remember, you know, being very stoked and humbled and honored to meet him. He was, but again, another one of those guys. Car wrecks are fucking scary, and it's it's horrible because, you know, he was so amazing and such a great dude.
What about, do you got a good Matt Beach story?
Oh man, plenty.
That's what I figured. Matt Beach is kind of he's kind of like a unicorn. I haven't seen him that much, especially in years, but this guy's one of the better skaters of his era, right?
Yeah. Like, oh, absolutely. Him and
Jamie Fortune.
Oh, yeah. Jamie
Fortune's
amazing.
They're lurking up there. And Jamie hit Wallenberg long time ago.
I'd love to hear that
one thing that I always remember about Matt Beach is the 50-50 like coffin grind.
The coffin grind. He's an incredible dude, man. You know, I met him when I was 10 years old there was a contest series in Oregon and Washington, and mostly Oregon Amateur Skateboard Association, OASA. And it was like the Oregon equivalent of CASEL. And, you know, I met him at that, you know, and I was just entering the contest, you know, whatever. And he was already ripping. He was already on GNS. He was already factory sponsored at the time, just ripping. He was, you know, he was 2 years older than me at that time, seemed like, you know, eternity. And then I remember I got to know him, you know, through a few contests, and then his parents invited me to come skate his backyard mini ramp, and I skated his backyard mini ramp and his garage mini ramp and hung out with him a few times. My mom and his mom clicked as homies, and you know, I could go on about Matt Beach for hours, but some of the funny things about him is, I'm just gonna admit right now, I'm an atheist. I'm not religious, but he's very religious, and we always got along because we kind of kept those separate even through our 20s, or you know, and in our early 30s. But one of the things that was neat about him, or interesting, I don't know about neat, but neat in a neat, interesting way, was he would never destroy property at churches. Like if there was a skate spot that was at a church, he would never skate it because he thought he was like that devout, which was interesting. And he would slam. He'd take the hardest slams, Like, I remember trying to switch frontside flip this double set that was really hefty at Lorehurst School in Portland. And he was slamming, getting swellbows and bloody. And he would refuse to swear. Like, most of them would be like, fuck, shit. He'd be like, oh, my gosh. Oh, shoot. You know? And it was just so sweet now looking back at it, because most of them would be like, oh, god damn it. You know? But here was Matt just like, oh, shoot. Oh, jolly gee. You know? He was like, to describe Matt Beach, no one's ever met him. He is Ned Flanders with a skateboard. Like, I think Matt Groening literally, I think Matt Groening, like, drew Ned Flanders as, like, a joke about, like, Matt. I mean, and he's an amazing skater, accomplished and very nice and humble. He's always very respectful to whatever views are. He's not one of those pushy religious zealots. It's like, you must be this way. I can't hang with you. Because Jamie Fortune was a swear happy, pushing over rent-a-cop, angry, like, you know, James Kelch of Portland type guy. But they were best friends. And if Matt Beach and Jamie Fortune get along, then I don't see why this world is so divided now, because I'm all about skateboard tricks, not politics. But when I see people are like, I can't be friends with him because of this or this, and you see it all the time, you know, the Republican, Democrat, whatever, right? You know, I see Matt Beach and Jamie, they are close friends, and I know they'd give each other organs if they needed one, like if they're in surgery. But Jamie is like a fuck yeah, heavy metal, like, rah, I'm pissed, I'm peeling out in the car. Fuck you, rent a cop. What are you doing here stopping me? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
fuck you. Give me a shot of whiskey. And then there's Matt, who, like, as far as I know, never drank a sip of beer in his life. As far as I know, never smoked a joint in his life. Never swore that I saw. If he did, it was, you know, somewhere rare. All the chicks he dated were, like, through the church, you know, like he was always like, he was always had this, like, connection with the skate church, which I always thought was funny, because I used to make jokes to him, and I don't know if he liked it or not, but he was always getting these, like, super hot chicks. And I was like, where'd you meet her? He's like, church. On Sunday. And I'm like, dude, like, you know, like, hilarious. I'm like, dude, bro, like, that's amazing. Like, I guess I need to go to fucking church. What am I doing in my life? You know, I'm hanging with, like, some Burnside trog chick with fucking a dip of chew in her mouth. You know what I mean? Like, some burly chick that's about to arm wrestle Chloe and Donk. And meanwhile, fucking Matt's pulling some, you know, beautiful woman. And it was just one of those comedic things where, you know, he was always very humble through the GNS days, to the Birdhouse days, to the Firm days. He never got a big head. He was always the type of guy that would take time out of his day to show people how to do tricks. He's one of those people that I admired because he lived his religion instead of being one of those, like, fire brimstone. Like, I'm not going to point fingers at certain people in the skating industry, but he wasn't one of those guys that would, like, get on the podium and, like, you know, talk about God for 6 hours. He was just like, he kept it very personal to himself. It was a very personal thing for him, but he wasn't one of those guys that was, like, in interviews or, like, if he had a chance to talk, you know, in 4-1, he wasn't like, yeah, Jesus is Lord and everyone else is going to die and go to hell. You know, he wasn't like, he didn't go Lenny Kirk on the situation. I'm not trying to talk shit about Lenny Kirk, amazing skater, but, you know, he didn't, like, go crazy like that.
Right.
You know, he, you know, like, I remember his 4-1 profiles were the gods of smoking a cigar singing, this is the Matt Beach profiles. He's like, God, and Matt's got ukulele singing. And so that's what I loved about his Matt is he could hang with dudes like that.
Yeah.
But also he had this very, spiritual connection to his, you know, his God, right? And dude. So what I liked about Matt is he never pushed it on me. He never was pushy. He never was weird. He never got preachy. If you went to a skate spot with him and you ate shit, he would just look at you, observe. You know, he wouldn't, like, you know, freak out and be like, oh, how dare you say the Lord's name in vain? How dare you say God, you know? When he moved to Southern California, he was off Fullerton Street in Orange County when they were filming the Firm video. Lance Mountain got Matt and Kurt Hayashi a house just to live in. Just a rental house just for them to film the video part. And, you know, Rodrigo and all those other guys would come into town and they'd stay there. It was kind of like the Firm equivalent of the Warner Ave mob, but, like, not, you know, no booze and nothing, right? All they had was RC cars and Capri Sun, you know, but yet it was the same type of thing, you know? And I'd go there and visit them when I was living down there. And it was just so funny because you had John Humphreys, who was, like, shooting artsy photos and stuff and, like, shooting these big campaigns for these big, you know, shoe companies. And you had Matt, who was, like, reading Bible study. You had Kurt Ash, who's working on his video stuff. And, you know, they all were playing with RC cars. And it was just very comical hodgepodge of people. And I'd crash there if I didn't want to drive back to L.A. or San Diego and stuff. And Matt was always very accommodating in the morning. Would you like some cereal or granola? You know, like I said, Ned Flanders, you know, like. I was like Bart Simpson and he was fucking Ed Flanders. You know, here I was just like, you know, but, you know, neat guy. I haven't talked to him for a long time. I saw his parents at Kurt Hayashi's funeral when Kurt died of that stroke. And I flew up to Portland to see, you know, to give my respects. And I saw Matt's parents and, you know, I don't know if it's my right to say, but, you know, Matt's been going through some health issues, so he wasn't there. And, you know, I'll leave that to him to get into the details, of course, but that's why we haven't seen much footage of him, but you know, he's a great guy, a humble guy. He camps a lot. Him and Jamie are still really close. They hang out and stuff like that. He's really into camping now and outdoorsman stuff. And like I said, here's Jamie Fortune, heavy metal dude, you know, did And Jamie will admit this, you know, this isn't, you know, he's admit this on social media, so I don't feel weird like I'm airing anything up. But Jamie went through a phase where he was into hard drugs and things like that and cleaned himself up. And here's him and Matt, still buddies to this day, still camping, hanging out, being friends. And I just wish the rest of the world could see that as an illustration that you got Jamie Fortune, who's like, ah, and then Matt Beach, who's like, oh, and they're buddies, you know? And I think skateboarding is a beautiful bonding agent. It's like Bondo in that way. It's a catalyst for that because you get everybody from the Hesh to the Fresh and everything in between. You get everyone from the reborn again Krishna Soy to the before Krishna Soy in one, you know, focus era Krishna Soy, you know, who, you know, I remember seeing Krishna Soy at Burnside when he was at the lowest of low of his drug use. And, you know, silver spray paint Doc Martens, fucking purple hair, fucking, you know, freshly out of a needle nap, fucking eyes just fucking shit, like, you know, like just, you know, uppers and downers, you know, all day. Just looking like shit, you know, still ripping the park somehow magically, but
he was the first guy to do the transfer, right? From the thing into the big bowl, right? Like Choppy did it later, but Chris did it first, right?
Yeah, Chris did it first. Like he did it from the where the bank of the spine to the bowl.
That's so gnarly.
Yeah, it was in one of those. I can't remember which video. I want to say it was that one guy that worked for Volcom and did the first Volcom video, but I feel like it was like a whiskey video or some. It was some weird underground video it was in, or maybe it wasn't a Thrasher video. And I might be mixing up Choppy's was in the underground video. I want to say
one of them was a contents page, maybe in Thrasher.
There it was something like that. Contents. Yep. I saw it somewhere. It's a blur now because it was 100 years ago, but yeah, I mean, I saw Krishna Soy in Sacramento at Capitol Burnout when I was a really little kid. My mom had a good friend that lived in Sacramento, so we took the train down to visit her, and it happened to be the same weekend that Capitol Burnout was going on. So I got to see, like, Krishna as, like, the rip, like, lady killer Krishna Soy, like, rock star spandex. Like,
that was the guy,
man. Yeah, he signed my tracker shirt that I had, and he's just like, even though he's an indie guy, he was cool. You know, I was a little kid. He's just like, you know. And then I saw him at Burnside years after that as, like, the low point Christian, like, drug addict, you know, tweaked out of meth, him and Christian Fletcher hanging out. And then I saw him as the reborn again Christian that, you know, is like the clean cut, you know, fedora hair, you know. And I think religion is important to dudes like that because it saved their lives. And that's a great thing. I'm not going to shit on it. I don't need that, but, you know, teach their own, right? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, I don't want anyone to shit on me. The fact that I fucking love sugar. That's my one only vice. You give me some Oreos, holy fuck, I eat the whole package. You know what I mean? That's my fucking thing right now, man. I try to quit sugar. You know, that's the only thing I can't quit. And
well, you're lucky because you're a skinny guy, man. If I eat too much sugar, I go freaking, I'm the new fatback. I'll take over Joe Brooks' role.
Yeah, dude, Joe Brook, bro. Fucking love Joe Brook. I love Joe Brook so much.
He's the best.
He is, man. I remember when I was riding for Vision back in the 90s, you know, Vision always wanted to make more coverage. And of course, they weren't going to do anything to help you get coverage. And I was in the Bay Area and I shot a sequence with some poor college student that went to Berkeley. I sadly don't remember his name. I want to give him a shout. Matt Ryan. His name is Matt Ryan. He had a Nikon F5. He shot a sequence shot of me at Third and Army doing a hard pressure 50-50 grind, shove it out on the low ledge there, you know, like one of the low ledges. And he developed it and then he gave it to me. He's like, can you use this for a Vision ad? And I was like, yeah, but let's see if we can shop around first, see if I can get like a, you know, article. So I go to freaking Thrasher/Slap. I literally go to the receptionist at the desk. I have the negatives on slides. I'm sorry, slide film, you know. And Joe Brook was so sweet. And it was just so funny. I go in there. I meet Evan Sterling first. He's like, oh, where do you want these to go? I was like, well, I think Slap, because I already had coverage in Thrasher at that point. So I was trying to shock and affect my coverage. I was thinking that side out the box is like 1998, right? And I go to the basement. I just remember Thrasher being upstairs and then down in the basement was Slap, like down these stairs. And I meet Joe Brook. He's like, okay, we'll scan him in. He scanned him in this, you know, the big bed scan or, you know, the slide scanner thing.
That's
and so we're sick. Talking. And he's like, hey man, if these don't go anywhere, I'll let you know in a week. All right. We'll talk it over with, you know, me and Lance Dawes and da, da, da. And if we're not going to use them, then use them for a Vision ad. Cause he understood that we had deadlines at Vision and shit. I was like, thank you, man. So I took the slides back and he was nice enough that he was like, you know what? Like if you need anyone to like, you know, like frame him up or clean up this guy that shot, this isn't, you know, I mean, he was very complimentary and diplomatic, but you could tell he was saying this guy isn't the best, you know, his slave flashes are off and this and this. And, you know, he could tell he was trying to be nice to the kid, but also like he fucked up.
Yeah.
And you know, kind of like it's a thin chance we're going to use him, but I'm going to be nice and entertain the thought. So he takes me over to the warehouse and gives me a bunch of swag, which at that time, clean laundry meant everything. You know, a stack of Slap shirts and Thrasher shirts and, you know, a bunch of videos and a bunch of stickers and a bunch of hats and beanies and shit, which kept me warm in San Francisco because, you know, the fucking they get cold there, even the summer at night. I remember going to that one bar that the guy from FTC owned with Jimmy Shores, because Jimmy Shores was DJing there. I remember my ears freezing off like that winter and like wearing the fucking slap hat, keeping me warm outside when everyone was taking smoke breaks. And I remember the name of that bar.
Ken?
Yeah, Ken. Yeah, Ken.
Yeah, yeah. Across from the Thai restaurant on the.
Yes.
So that hill that goes down, I forget what street it is, right off Haight Street.
Yeah.
Right, Jake was bombing that hill and he got cut off and ran right into a fire hydrant and got smoked. So anytime we would drive up there, he would always point and be like, I got smashed.
I got smashed right there, bro. Yeah. That's where I fucking ate shit. So I love it because I remember that spot being cool was happening, you know.
It was fun for a while. They used to have like all kinds of like, you know, Thursday night was dollar hams or whatever.
Yep. I remember I had a fake ID. Sorry, Ken. I was like, you know, 19, but I had a fake Washington State ID and, they let me drink. And I remember meeting women there and skating up to it. And Jimmy Shores was DJing and Safa DJed there. And I remember going to Safa.
Safa Leon.
Yeah. Yeah. And Safa on the ones and twos and shit. And I just remember that bar being, for me, it was really cool in my drinking days now, whatever. But like, being young and being able, being in the city and drinking and skating around and hitting all the weird spots on Upper Haight Street. And, it was just fun. That big ass hill. I remember that. And I remember the Thai food place. I remember going there and getting Thai pan noodles. And
it's
and,
one of the best Thai restaurants in the city. I love that
dude,
place.
Big
I think
fan.
It's called Thep Phnom.
Dude, you are amazing. Your memory is phenomenal, dude. I remember
going
in there.
I still live here, bro.
Yeah. Well, that helps out. That helps out, right? I remember that. And I remember me and this chick at the bar, and she took me for like this rad tour, being the Oregonian I was. I was walking with my board, not skating, because I didn't want to be in front of her. And she showed me that tower that was a monument to the San Francisco fire. I remember we walked all the way from that bar to that tower. It seemed like forever, like miles. But when you're drunk, everything seems weird. Mm. And I remember we sitting down there at night and just having a heart to heart and like tripping out on that. I forget the name of that thing. It looks like a fire hose hot nozzle, the big tower thing. I always forget the name of it. But I remember that's when I learned that's what that damn thing was, And we were going up and down stuff. Me and her were hanging out all night. It was like
Coit Tower.
Thank you. Thank you. I knew you were going to name it. I was like, God, I just remember. But anyway, that bar. Yes. Thank you to Ken for helping me. I don't want to be crass. I'm an old married man. But yes, thank you for helping me build relationships with some nice Bay Area women. There we go. I'll just say it that.
Well, Ken's got to be major inspo for you guys as a shop owner. That guy's been doing it really a long time.
Oh, and yeah.
He's I don't know if he's the GOAT. There's a lot. But FTC has put out some amazing skate videos.
Oh, absolutely.
They've had amazing teams, and been on Haight Street in a prime location for who knows how long.
Forever,
in one of the best cities, if not the best city in the world.
Yeah.
So shout out to Ken.
It's the only true city in California. I tell everyone that here because they're always like,
I like that.
Every year I get the 18-year-old that's like, I'm graduating high school. We're in California trying to move. And I'm like, look, man, everything else is just suburbia with that masquerades as a city. And this is from living in all three of the major cities there. So I've lived in San Diego, I've lived in LA, I've lived in San Francisco. So if someone wants to battle me, I will fucking go toe-to-toe on this any day. Like, I will be pugilistic about this.
Let's go.
Because every other city that's major in California is suburbia that masquerades as a city, right? It's like North Korea where they're like, there's fake grocery stores and fake skyscrapers and all the shit. But the thing about SF, where it's a real city culturally, where you can get on the BART and you can travel without needing a car. You can live there your whole life and not need a fucking car. And that's what separates a suburbia to a city to me, is a mass transit. If I can get a slice of pizza at 3:30 in the fucking morning, that's a city. Okay. LA has little nuances of that, but still so spread out. If you want to go to a hardware store, you got to get on fucking, the 480 to the 10, right? If you're in Echo Park, you got to go all the way to the fucking beach to get a goddamn tattoo or whatever. You know what I mean? Bullshit like that. In the city, everything's vertical instead of out. And every other place in California that I lived and experienced other than the Bay Area 51 was not a fucking city. It was just suburbia with a city masquerading as something that it wasn't. And SF is real. It's got culture, it's got flavors, it's got history, it's got museums, it's got everything you need. It doesn't matter what profession you're in, what background you're in. It's got a little of everything. It's got what you need. It's the taster platter of everything a city has. So when people are like, I want to move to a city in California, like move to San Francisco. If they're like, well, I got a cousin that lives in, Fullerton. I'm like, well, go stay with him for a while, but I'm warning you, it's going to suck. You're going to be spending $8 million in gas. You have to drive. Or like, for instance, Colin Slew, amazing skater from here, right? He lives in LA. He's like, I can't go here, but J-Con because traffic's so bad. If I get off of like, you know, Wilshire and Western, and I want to get on the freeway in the 10. It takes me 6 hours to get a clip. I'm like, dude, just go to the city. You can ride the BART and you can make a video part in a month. Easy. Like, you got, you know, you got so many spots. I remember when I was in the city, I dropped my Elevate Trucks part, the Uprising part, which I know is similar to the name of Santa Cruz. It was before Santa Cruz. They both were around the same time. But the Uprising part, I filmed that whole thing in a fucking summer, and it was all riding the BART. It was just hanging out with the boys, the homies that were filming, going to every spot on the BART. I didn't touch a car for that whole video part. And that was why, wow, I was like, this is a fucking city. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to fucking drive out to the middle of nowhere to like beat myself to death, you know, in San Jose to make a decent video part. And Portland was like that, but miniaturized. Portland, I don't know about anymore because I haven't lived there for 20 some years. So forgive me to anybody there that might beg a differ. But the TriMet was a lot like the BART. The Max, all the bus lines were very similar. I had a bus pass until I was 18. I didn't drive a car until I was 18 until I had a job where they required me to. I worked at a construction job. Like, you better get your driver's license or fuck you. So I had to, you know, pony up and do it. But I literally, you know, my teen years was just riding the bus and the Max everywhere. And I learned to skate spots that way, just organically through just going to different spots and beating the shit out of myself and feeling that groove of trying to figure shit out and hearing about different spots from people. And then I'd be like, oh, that's off the bus 9. Okay, that's most off the bus 20. You know what I mean? Like, they'd tell me where it was, and I'd look at the map, and I'd sit there like fucking like a goddamn guy looking for a Spanish galleon ship in the, you know, Bahamas. And I'd be like, oh, Airport Banks. Okay, so they're off the bus freaking 19, but I'm gonna have to go up Powell Boulevard and transfer in Sandy. Okay, I'll skate down this bike trail. They'll go behind the Burger King, and I'll skate that spot Neil Henning skated in fucking beer helmet, you know, like whatever, you know what I mean? So it was like, that was the kind of shit that, like, you know, I was doing all the time, you know what I mean? Like, was that, and I missed that when I got, I'm gonna say drafted to go to California. That's a horrible word, but you know, it felt like a draft to the Vietnam. Like when Vision was like, we're gonna either get rid of you, you're gonna need to move to California because this is where all the coverage is. So I moved to Southern California because, you know, that was where the rent was cheap. And I had a buddy that was a friend of mine that was trying to become an actor. Actually, he did. That's mean. Eric Berry, I love you. Sorry, that sounded horrible. he was in Cecil B. Demented. He played Fidget in that. That's his big role with the Donnie Darko guy, him and Donnie Darko, where the fuck that guy's name is. They were in a movie together. Whatever, Gyllenhaal. But he was in a John Waters film. He's in a bunch of shit, and that was very rude. I love you, Eric. Sorry, but he was my roommate. We lived together. You know, he was trying to make it happen. I was making it, you know, I was fighting in the skate industry to make it happen. He was fighting in the acting industry. He was like the SAG guy, practices his lines every night, you know, going for auditions, getting his ass kicked. You know, he was in a million like toothpaste commercials and shit. And I was in there like just, you know, every paycheck that I had from Vision and Unleashed Clothing, you know, and all these other fucking cheese dick sponsors all went into my bills. But it was the most fun I had in my life. I won't trade for anything. You know what I mean?
Night shower, dad is skating the world. Night shower,
yes, yeah. Sir. Hey, I got an idea real quick. This is going to be the first ever live bathroom break.
Oh, cool.
I'll be back in 33 seconds after we hear from Blood Wizard and Blue Plate, my sponsors.
Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden, and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden, and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard.
Shout out. Shout out.
There you go, guys.
Dope.
A little longer than 33 seconds, but you know, we do our best. And Tommy Gro says,
I love Blue Plate. I love Blue Plate. I love.
Yeah. Hey, when you got it, you're a skate. You got it, you're a skate. You know what I mean?
That's hey, a- so I'm gonna ask you two more questions, and then we got some cameos. We got some big time cameos, guys. So stick around.
All right.
I got some people that are gonna come in and ask Nate some questions, and you probably have seen them or heard of them. But before we get into that, I got two things I wanted to talk to you about. One is the Robin Big thing. I'm not totally sure on this. Like, do you got beef with Rob? Did you guys work it out? Like,
I mean,
the thing you just dropped looked weird. Like maybe you were disrespected a little bit. I don't even know the whole story completely. Like, was that a tryout to be on the show, or was that actually the show?
So that situation was very comical. To rewind before that, to give you, I guess, a little bit of background on it, was when Rob was living in Carlsbad off Palmera Port Road in a rental house. This is a zillion years ago. I was skating the KOTF and the DCTF all the time, you know, because there was just a bunch of fun places you would get busted. And I would like to think we befriended each other pretty well. And he was like, "You're really comical, man. You're really funny. Like, I'm working on this pilot for a show. It's going to be like me and Big. It'd be sick to be like you." And we're like, "We're just going to do, you know, shenanigans and, you know, hijinks." And I was like, "Okay, cool. Sick. Like, whatever, right?" And then he just kept saying that for like 2 years, dude. And there's a million reasons I quit drinking, and a million reasons I think anyone out there should think twice before they say dumb things drunk to anybody. Partially my fault, partially his fault for not being mature, but we're both at fault, you know, for this divorce of friendship, if that's like a rare term, you know. But anyway, I was shacked up by the chick that was in England at the time. And don't ask me why I was an insane person, but I flew over to England after 2 years of him threatening that he was going to have a show, and just, I felt kind of like he was crying wolf. I didn't think it was going to actually happen. He calls me up. I had an international plan. You know, I'm in London. I'm on an international plan. You know, I'm on the little Nokia. This is, you know, pre-iPhone. And he's like, "Hey, Nate, I need you to fly back to the States. We're shooting the pilot. We're going to make this happen. Like, it's going to happen." And I was drunk, and I was kind of teasing. I was like, "Oh, bullshit. You've been saying it for like 2 years." Like, I was just kind of like, "I'm not going to get on a fucking flight and find out this is going to happen. Like, God, I'm living the dream here." Like, I was shacked up with this chick out there, and I literally thought I was going to defect. I was literally about to become an English citizen, defect from the States. I was literally just going to, like, just disappear in England and, you know, freaking hang out at, you know, freaking Slam City Skates every day or some shit, you know, and try to find a day job as a bartender. But anyway, long story short, freaking, he's like, "You need to fly back." And I was drunk, and like, I said some dumb shit, and he hung up on me. So anyway, fast forward about 6 months. Obviously the show is aired now. It's taken off. He's got a TV show, right? I break up with that chick. I get back to the States about a year, about a year from the phone call, roughly, give or take a few months. And the first season's wrapped up. It's done. And he calls me up. He's like, "Hey, man, let's bury the hatchet. Like, yo, man, like, you know, we should hang out and just, you know, chop some things up and yada, yada. Like, you know, bygones be bygones." And I fell for it. It was just a lure to ostracize and to condescend and to be pugilistic, which I'm not that way. When someone greets me with daggers, I like to greet them with flowers. I'm not a warlike person, but when provoked, you know, I don't want to get pushed over, right? So, you know, like, he acts like on the phone, that's all going to be hunky dory. "Look, like Chris is going to, Chris and Scott are done. They're getting out of the show. They want to get out of the showbiz thing. They got their own deal. They're going to do with their clothing company. How about we bury the hatchet and we have you come on and you're going to be the new assistant?" And, originally, I'm not even joking. You can ask him about this. He's not going to lie about it. It was originally going to be like Rob, Big and Nate show. Like, literally I was going to be, you know, titled in there and stuff, according to him. And, yeah, it's nuts. Yeah, it's crazy. I was, you know, supposed to be that much of a part of it, and which is really weird and surreal looking at now. And you can ask him about it. He'll admit to it. You know, he's admitted to it. He did a translated article with Eric Stricker after this, talking about that. And there's cited articles that you could dig out from that time period where he talks about that and how I fucked up. And anyway, so I'm thinking everything's cool. So I drive up to LA, and freaking, I come over to the house, and it was just like this kind of like, they edit out a lot of that. I mean, they edit for TV, but it was just, it was like this condescending bullying, you know, like, "Oh, you got to do this now. I wanted you to clean this. And you fucked up. You left it for a girl." He was just basically trying to like ostracize me on camera to get my goat. But I wasn't gonna be one of those reality show assholes like the ones you see on TV all the time. They're like, "Fuck you, man!" You know, I don't want to be like the rich wives of the NBA.
Puck.
Yeah, I don't want. There we go. I don't know who that is, but you know, I didn't want to be like one of those knocked out frat guys. Like what happens in the real world and they all live together and this guy.
Yeah, Puck, Real World SF. That was the bike messenger guy.
There you go. I did not want to be that guy, so I left gracefully. And then he calls me up again. And I'm like, dude, you're just a short man. Like, he's a small man, big mouth. Like, literally, Ian McKay wrote the song prior to this a million years ago. Like, he is literally what Minor Threat was talking about. Small man, big mouth. You know, he dishes out, but he can't take it. He's got thin skin as fuck, but he acts like, you know, he's one of those guys that can just dish out to anybody as long as he's in the position of control. But if you throw it back at him and, you know, call him a fucking douchebag or, you know, someone, you know, that's got insecurity issues, then he's going to fucking flip. So I don't want to say it's beef. I just think what it is the guy needs to fucking grow up, you know?
So he never apologized or tried to make it right.
You know, it was one of those situations where, like, after that, I just kind of was like, fuck this, you know? Yeah. And then there was another thing with the Fancy Factory where I thought we're going to make up and be cool. But he was talking about, I don't know, fucking what's his fuck? One of those fucking Palf brothers wanted to get a job. So he came over to my apartment in San Diego, like kind of surprise attacked me. And we talked about my hernia surgery, which I just had. And I thought he was going to make up. But again, it was just more just about like how, you know, he was just trying to make an example of how you could fuck up in life and be like me if his cousin quit. And again, it wasn't really a makeup. I thought that was going to make up. I gave him two chances to make up and he didn't. So, yeah, that's pretty much it with me and Rob. You know, like, you know, I was on another episode. Yeah, like I said, Fancy Fact. I was on two episodes or whatever. Or no, that was. I think they both made it only to the special features or some shit. I don't know. Some weirdos, like they record that stuff at the TV and they send it to me. And like,
I saw that.
I never actually watched the, the actual show. I've never actually watched the whole episode or anything. I mean,
yeah,
I get the premise.
Same.
You know, so it's one of those things where like people have sent me random things, like DM me and inbox me and, hey, I saw this on this. What's the deal? And so I explained it. And then I had a friend of mine who's my mechanic that works in my car here. And his wife was a big Rob Big fan. So I uploaded to my YouTube because I was like, here you go. That explains it, you know, because I was like, you know, whatever. Like, this explains my history better than I can with words, I think. I think a lot of times actions speak louder than words. Mm. And it's easier just to be like, why are you and Rob not cool? Well, here you go. Here's the episode, right? So I'll upload this. So it explains it better than I can, even though I'm one of those people where, like, I think truth has more meaning than anything else in this world. And I feel that, like, a lot of people, if they feel ostracized or hurt, they want to cover up that and like extinguish it like politicians. Me, I don't. I'll wear it on my chest. Here's what happened. Here's the course of action. Hell, I'll even post this. I'm like Geico. Hey, I'll tell you about your competitors. You know, if they can save you money, go for it. You know, that's how I am. Like when people want to know why I have bad blood with them.
We call it an open book.
I'm an open book. There you go. You know, and it's like, I don't hate the guy. I like to think now 20 years later, he's grown up. He's married. He's got libraries in his name and shit. And he started Street League and sold that and did all these things. And, you know, he's one of those strange, obtuse anomalies where, you know, I mean, I when I was a little kid, I looked up to him because, you know, I remember watching Memory Skein and seeing his part, you know.
Alien Workshop,
you know what I mean? Skating all those, like, lily pad spots in Ohio and just being like, this guy rips. So when I met him, it was kind of cool. And we seemed really cool. But then once he got some fame, it just made his head fucking big and he got really strange after the fame. He does not like it when someone fucks him over, which I did. And I didn't mean to. It wasn't intentionally. I was an alcoholic. I mean, we'll just be honest, you know? And I mean, that was my own fault for being a drunk asshole. And I guess you could say being too loose with my words and not, you know, being proper.
I blame the alligator.
Oh, the alligator. Yes, that's you, Faye. Yeah, I don't think you like the alligator too much. Do that fucker on the roof. I brought him over for media. I thought it'd be a nice little.
Yeah, that didn't go over well, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think it did either. He was pissed off about the alligator. And I brought the alligator over for the dogs. It's like a, you know, you don't bring a friend flowers, you don't bring them chocolates. You know, that's what you do with chicks when you fucking get in a fight. So I thought, okay, what can I bring him up there that'll be cool for the dogs or something he doesn't have? And the fucker's rich. So it's like, I can't bring him like, you know, like, I don't know, a 12 pack of beer or some fancy cheese or something because he's rich, right? So I was trying to think of something unique. And at the time I thought, oh, a big stuffed alligator. Dogs love that kind of shit. They love to play with toys and strangle them and, you know, hump them. You know what I mean? I was just trying to think of something for the dogs. Something a little bit unique, you know, something that every person needs when they have a dog. So I think that's what it was with Etouffee, the alligator, you know, but, and they edited that to make it a little bit, you know, to make the dagger look sharper than it was. You know, there was a lot of play between that and that.
I bet. I know how that works.
You know, it is this reality show.
You edit all the stuff to make a story. Yeah, right, go take a trip. Acapulco says, I never watched the whole episode. It's like something tainted real skating and videos. So there you go. That's what our audience thinks. I want to know real quick, too, what you thought, because I know you tuned in a little bit last night, Clyde Singleton. That episode was one of my – I love Clyde, first of all. And McKenney's like, this is the Richard Pryor of skateboarding. Like, this guy is just hilarious. He should have stand-up. He should have his own show. Should just – there's so many options that this guy should be taking on. And I feel it's a privilege for me, an honor – that he and I have a good relationship and he's willing to talk to me in those circumstances and open up the way he did. Right. And meanwhile, he's in this hardship and he's still cracking everybody up, telling you his horror story.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an individual that is just, he's very special and I love Clyde. So I was wondering what your favorite parts are.
I mean, my God, I used it as a quote today in the shop. Your ego is not your amigo. I love that quote. I mean, that was genius. That, you know, that was poetry in its purest form right there. Like you said, he's willing to be vulnerable. Just like Richard Pryor, McKenney has a good similarity because, you know, Richard Pryor would do stand-up comedy acts about a lot of his hardships and his adversity and strife. And I love that Clyde is happy where he is in the world. You know, he's a person that's generally excited and happy what he does. He's a culinary expert. He's an amazing chef. He's like the guy in the bear. He makes these beautiful plates of food. He has passion for video making. He's passionate for journalism. I love his journalism. I mean, I don't think I would be on your show doing the little segment I'm doing if it wasn't for him and the Street Scott piece that he did that, you know, tied into Cedar Rapids. So, I mean, a crazy wraparound connection of Clyde and Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which is a weird thing to think about a guy from Jacksonville, Florida, being connected to, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. But this guy, Kevin Lavely, who is a longtime customer of mine, and he's in his mid-60s. He's like, just imagine old Ron Allen type guy, you know, but Ron Allen's an amazing skater. I'm not trying to shit on Kevin, but you know, he's more of a soul cruiser carve, you know, all up a curb here and there guy.
Yeah.
And Kevin Lavely was roommates with Street Scott. And he always talks these wonderful stories about Street Scott, him and Street Scott hitchhiking from here to Minneapolis, then later on hitchhiking down to San Francisco and yada, yada. And then Street Scott getting a job at Thrasher and being on the cover of the Meg in 82. And, you know, he has all these beautiful stories about Street Scott. And I didn't know anything about Street Scott except what Kevin Lavely told me about and the little amount of coverage he brought him. And then Clyde Singleton posted that beautiful article, beautiful piece. And I wish there was a word in my vernacular better than beautiful, because it was just an amazing, well-documented and cited piece on Street Scott on his Instagram about how, you know, Mark Gonzalez cited Street Scott as the inventor of handrail skating. You know, in my whole life, it was always Gons, Johnny Cop, Nottis, right? These are the three guys that... you know, the Mount Rushmore of the start, the spark, the nucleus of handrail skating. And I think about how handrail skating now is everywhere, right? It's like, it's in surfing. They put handrails in waves, or anyways, they put them in mountains for snowboarding. They put them in, you know, weird wakeboard events. Every skate park known to man from here to Calcutta and around the globe 100 times has a built-in flat bar handrail, right? And I always accredit as, oh my God, God's invented such a crazy monolith of a thing. You know, even old people that are 80, you're like, do you ride down the banisters on your skateboard? I saw a guy on TV doing that, you know?
Yeah.
But it all started from a guy from Mason City, Iowa, named Street Scott. And that's just beautiful to me that I live in a place in this small town in Iowa, an hour away from me, the guy that invented handrail skating, went to Golden Gate Park and cavemaned a handrail and started all this. Had Kevin Thatcher shoot the photo, bam. And I never knew the importance of it because, and I love Kevin. He knows, I've said this to his face. So this isn't gossip. And if he watches this, he'll understand. But Kevin Lake was just like an old stoner, like, you know, Grateful
KT,
Dead guy.
That's the guy.
You know what I mean? Yeah. KT.
No, before you continue, KT, Kevin Thatcher, he created this.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Kevin Lavely. I'm talking about Kevin Lavely, the guy is in my town. But yeah, Kevin Thatcher, yes. I love Kevin Thatcher. And go on about the logo. Please educate the audience. I know about Kevin Thatcher, too. Sorry, they're both Kevins, but yes.
Yeah, he made the Thrasher logo and was the first editor and just huge inspo for me and probably everybody. So.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of Kevin Thatcher, huge. And I mean, I have that Street Scott frame cover up there and you know, I'm trying to find a place on the wall for it right now. In fact, if you got a second, I can go grab it and bust it out right now.
Let's grab it.
I'm going to do it right now. All right, my man. Night shower, dad is skating the
world. I love Mr. Neil Blender, man.
Whoa, slow it down.
Yes, now we're back.
Okay, and we're back.
Yay, you got it!
Mind blown.
I love Blue Plate.
Yeah. Yes, now we're back.
Okay, and we're back.
There we go, my man. Check it out. Street Scott. Bam. This thing still smells like cigarettes. It's amazing.
Wow, that is nice.
Isn't that sick? So Kevin Lavely, his old roommate, gave this to me. Street Scott sadly passed away of liver failure back in 2010. And so he didn't have any kids or any next of kin. And Kevin Lavely, his roommate, you know, basically Street Scott's dad was just like, I don't want this old skate shit. So Kevin Lavely inherited the leather jacket he was wearing in the caveman photo. He inherited his old shred sled, a Dwayne Peters, Santa Cruz. He inherited all his gear. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to give you the one, because he has a stack of these mags, but he gave me the one framed one that was hanging on the wall in their apartment, you know, like when he got back into town after being an SF and stuff.
That rules, dude. You got it all framed. Like, cool.
So, but, you know, big thanks to Clyde Singleton for being a real journalist and bringing that to light. And the other thing that's crazy is the fact that, you know, Kevin Lavely, who's a very stoic man, a very quiet, you know, like I said, a Jerry Garcia type guy. I've never seen him tear up. When I showed him that article that Clyde wrote on him, he literally cried. It's the only time I've seen that guy ever tear up. Like, he literally was just like, and so Clyde brings beauty to this world. He brings real journalism, you know, unbiased, you know, unfiltered. He also brings comedy. He also brings his amazing skate talent. I mean, come on, he was the first guy to ever do, like, you know, switch flips over, you know, LA picnic tables, you know, 100 years before everyone does them now. You know, I'm not trying to insult him. It's obviously our trick. But Clyde was ahead of his time. I mean, I loved him in the aesthetics days. I loved him in, you know, you name it, all New York, et cetera, all the other sponsors between that. I was always a fan of Clyde, even when he had the article in the skateboard mag where he was writing those really funny columns. And people would try to stir the pot with me because I always looked at him as a comedian. And I think he should do stand-up. I think he should show. I agree completely with you. And oh my God, fucking McKinney. But I love comedy, and obviously you can tell I'm a very sarcastic human being. I like to laugh. You know, he would write articles, and sometimes he would say some funny shit about me, like, Nate, you know, Nate Sherwood's out there making his tail, you know, razored out enough that he can work for Gillette, you know, making razors. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I love it. Other people are trying to insult you. He's trying to insult you. I was like, I don't give a fuck. That's great. Like, I love a good roast. I love a good roast. I never thought
absolutely.
You know, like you said, your ego's not your amigo. When you see these old guys, like when he was talking about Chet Childress, and I'm not trying to talk shit about Chet Childress. I don't know him anymore. I knew him back in the day. Eric Stricker at Transworld had me, I don't know, write a few articles for Shits and Giggles. And one of the things I did a review on a Black Label video. And it was, I don't know. I just remember Chet Childress at the premiere of it at La Paloma Theater, get up on stage and being like, this video is real skateboarding. This ain't no bullshit gimmicky crap like jumping out of a helicopter or jumping to the Grand Canyon. Basically talking shit about Bob Burquist and Danny Way in his speech, right? And I'm like, wow, that's some ballsy shit. You gotta have some big balls. And also, you better back it up with the video part if you're gonna fucking shit on Bob and Danny, you gotta have like one hell of a video part to back that up if you're going to do that route. Which, you know, I don't recommend that to anybody because Danny Way is fucking God and Bob Burquist insane. And, you know, I mean, this is the most beautiful way. They're both amazing. Mm-hmm. And so in my little review of the Black Gold video, I said, well, at the speech, you know, of the intro of the video, Chet Childress got on stage and, you know, said exactly what I just told you. And yada, yada. I was like, but his video part, we skated a Jersey Bear off a big drop of his traffic, was pretty risky and pretty amazing. And quite the character, you know. And then I went on to talk about the other people in the video, you know, and, you know, Ben Gilly or whatever and everyone else. And anyway, I see Chet Childress I saw Matt Mudford. Jesus, I'm an idiot. I saw Matt Mudford like maybe a month after that. And I saw him at this bar called The Saloon in Encinitas, just this shitty fucking bar that Adrian Lopez owns a part of.
I know that one. Yep. Yeah. We used to call it X Games the Bar.
Oh, that makes sense. It is. It's like it is X Games the Bar. It's just a bunch of fucking surfers and snowboards and skaters.
Yeah.
Congregating there, all fucking sharing herpes to random women. You know what I mean? Everyone's like, oh, no, you got herpes from her too. Sick, bro. Check out the wart. You know, like, you know, I'm trying to be comedic. You know, I dropped in switch dance paddles on her too. High five, Rescue Brothers. No, but like, anyway. I see Matt Mumford. He like wants to brawl me, bro. Dude, whoa. I get my ass kicked.
Matt Mumford, mate.
I mean, that guy's got a bald head. He's ripped.
Yeah. You don't want to mess with him.
I met a chick and I was just like trying to like, dude, I'm being honest, I was just trying to get laid. I wasn't trying to get beat up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just there for the same reason every other piece of shit, loser pile shit like me was there. And fucking, everyone comes, he's like, well, you said about my buddy Chet was not very kind. Like, we need to step outside and talk about this. He's like poking my chest. I'm like, no, dude, I'm not stepping outside for nothing, man. Like, I'm yeah. this girl. Like, you have fun out there, like, with all your hostilities. Like, can I buy you a drink? He's like, no, I boxed over. He's like, you can't buy me a bloody drink. Oh, like, boxed over my drink, all pissed. I'm just, it was like the scene in Star Wars, bro. Like, Matt Mudford was like,
oh my God.
Either. Like, I feel like I was like, here's like, doo, 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 doo. You know, I was like, what the fuck, you know? So he goes out the front. Eventually, I go out the back door because I don't want to die because, you know, Matt Mudford is not in my weight class. Like,
yeah,
it has a bald head and like, I have nothing to grab onto and I don't have a garbage can to throw at him and I don't need to die. And so, anyway, like, Chet Childress hits me up. This is back in the MySpace days. Like, he writes this big thing like, fuck you, skateboarding hates you, nobody in skateboarding likes you, everyone in skateboarding wants you gone or dead. Just writes this big mean fucking thing. So I copy his inbox to me on MySpace and I change everything where he puts skateboarding to the football team. The football team does not like you. The football team does not want you around. Everybody in the locker room hates you. Da, da, da. So I changed to make him look like a jock and I sent it back to him and that pissed him off even more. And so he's like, fuck you, if I see you, we're gonna throw hands. I'm like, okay, Chet Childress, whatever, dude. Like, you got obviously insecurity issues. If you're not, the thing is, like, if you're going to talk shit about Danny Wayne Barbergus, you got to back it up. You can't, like, get mad at someone for, like, writing an article on it because if you're going to say that, you got to know it's going to become public knowledge and public information if you're going to say it in a public setting on a stage. Like, right now, I think I say publicly on this fucking thing right now, if someone says, Nate Sure was talking about womanizing women in a bar, I'm going to be like, how dare you? Oh, my God. You said I was a dickhead in the 90s. It's like, of course I was a dickhead in the 90s. I was fucking 19 years old and horny. Of course I was womanizing. What do you think I was fucking doing? You know, like, I was the only straight guy in fucking San Francisco. Of course. You know, what the fuck else do you think I was doing? You know what I mean? Like, Jesus Christ. I'm exaggerating. There's a lot of straight guys. You know, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, I know I'm just trying to be comedic, of course, you know, attempting in my hand.
No, comedy, yeah.
But, you know, it was like Chet. So Chet's always had this beef with me. So, like, when I saw that post that Clyde was talking about where he's like, are you a job? No one likes me skateboarding anymore. I'm like, wow, this is the guy told me I was 86 from skateboarding. Huh. I didn't say anything. I was polite because I'm an adult. I'm fucking almost 50. I'm not going to be like, you know, I didn't say shit. I just watched and said, interesting. So Sun Tzu said it best. When you wait on the riverbanks long enough, you'll see the bodies your enemies float by. You know, and hatred doesn't get you anywhere, man. You know what I mean? And like, I had nothing against Chet. It was 20 years ago. He was probably drinking a lot.
I think alcohol had a lot to do with all of that stuff. And I think everybody got older. Chet's a friend of mine and he's gone through some stuff and I think he's trying to like do, you know, we all, like you said, 19 years old drinking alcohol. A lot of things happen that we're not proud of.
Yeah. Night shower, dad is skating the world.